All right. The judges are putting together, tallying up the votes right now. And that was the first section of the speech competition here at Los Angeles Pierce College. That's the 2018 speech tournament here at Los Angeles Pierce College. This is Mario Lawson right here with KPCRadio.com. We're in a somewhat intermission right now. It looks like professors are chit-chatting with each other, enjoying the time and the music. People are still eating and enjoying a little bit of, you know, the ambiance here right now at Pierce College. Enjoy it today as we continue. This is Mario Lawson reporting for KPCRadio.com.
Okay, I'd like to welcome everybody back, give you a minute to take your seats. So just to catch everybody up, we've just completed the first category, which is the informative category. We're now going to move on to the persuasive category, and we're going to call up our first speaker. Okay, please help me welcome Emma Greenberg.
I came out as bisexual when I was 18 years old. I don't talk a lot about my coming out story because it was pretty uneventful. No one got angry at me, no one ever shamed me for my sexuality. I was very accepted by both my family and the school I went to and all of my friends. I got really lucky. And we're starting to make progress in this country where more people are getting that lucky, where their coming out stories aren't eventful anymore. But we still have a long ways to go. We can see how much progress we've already made, though. My parents, when they moved to Los Angeles at the height of the AIDS epidemic and watched many of their friends die because of it. When my aunt decided to marry her wife about 12 years ago, they had to go to Canada to get married because the state that they lived in at the time didn't have legal gay marriage. But today, all 50 states have legalized gay marriage, thanks to the Supreme Court. So we're starting to head in the right direction. Thank you. But we still have a long ways to go. Today, I'd like to propose that the LGBT community should be added to our ever-growing list of people that are under a federally protected class. Now, a lot of people in California don't know that the LGBT community isn't a federally protected class. And that makes a lot of sense. California, according to the New York Times, is still one of the safest places to be queer in America. But this is an actual issue, and in many states, people aren't as lucky as people that live in California. Let's start by defining what a federally protected class is. Federally protected class is a group of people that based on some characteristic, are considered to be at a disadvantage, and therefore they are given the protections of the government, the federal government, saying that they can't be discriminated against. Examples of this are race, gender, and mental and physical disability. But we still have a farther way to go when it comes to the treatment of our LGBT community. Right now, only 33 states out of 50 in America have made it illegal to discriminate against someone based on their sex, based on their sexual identity or their gender identity when it comes to looking for a job. 22 out of 50 states have made it illegal to discriminate against someone based on being a part of the LGBT community when it comes to housing. And only 11 states in America have made conversion therapy illegal. And this is an issue that actually affects us beyond just the LGBT community. The homelessness population in America is heavily dominated by people in the LGBT community. According to the National Coalition of the Homeless, 43% of their walk-in clients identify as part of the LGBT community. 30% of their clients off the street are part of the LGBT community, and 30% of the people in their housing programs are part of the LGBT community. These are fully functioning human beings that could contribute to our economy and have jobs and just live normal lives, and instead they're left on the street because no one wants to give them a job or a place to live. Now, like I said, we are going in the right direction. We've already legalized gay marriage. Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been overturned. And even more recently, if you look at a case in Florida, a teacher was fired from a Catholic private school right after marrying her wife, because this is when the school realized that she was gay. And after her being fired, parents at the school demanded to know why she was fired, saying she was one of the best teachers on their campus. And when they were not given an answer by the administration, and when it started to become clear that she was fired because she was gay, they demanded for her to be reinstated in her position, and some people even pulled their kids out of the school. We're heading in the right direction, but we still have a much farther way to go. And so I ask you to think about someone you know in your life that's gay or that's trans. Think about what it would be like for them if they didn't live in California, or what it is like for them if they don't. And I ask you to start taking this seriously and to start actually thinking about it, because we in California, a place where gay people already have all of these rights, we are the people that are already thinking in this direction, and we need to start making our voices heard.
Thank you, Emma, for that most important topic. Okay, our second speaker in the persuasive category, is Diana Hovhannisyan.
Please, close your eyes. Imagine you are walking along the seashore. You know, it's a kid laying on the sand on the seaside. You meet Anthony. He is dead. You are shocked. Open your eyes, please. This is a photo of 3-year-old Ike Auckland, whose family's boat sank in the water and did not get to its final destination. This earth-shattering photo induced the whole world to change its indifferent behavior towards Syrian refugees and to make certain steps aimed at helping these innocent people. Let's together explore why the United States, as the most influential country on earth, should continue accepting and supporting Syrian refugees. I'm really concerned about this issue. Many people move to different countries of Europe and US for a search of a better life, but not for all of them this is a matter of life or death. For many Syrian refugees, to find a safe place to live is a vital issue. Either they will get a refugee status, or most probably, they will die. In my speech, first I'll discuss the main directions of U.S. policy towards Syrian refugees, then the reasons cause the emergence of millions of Syrian refugees, and the steps U.S. should undertake to give relief and support to Syrian refugees. Let's start from the very beginning and understand how the U.S. policy towards Syrian refugees has been changed from 2012 to present. In 2011, Syrian civil war started and made millions of Syrians to escape from their own country. Only Germany accepted 1 million Syrians. United States policy has dramatically changed during the governmental period. According to Zizan's article, Syrian refugees in the United States, published in the Migration Policy Institute in 2017, in 2012, the United States accepted 31 Syrians, 13 about 36, 14 about 100, 15 about 1,000, 16 about 12,000 people, 17 about 3,000 people. In 2016, House of Representatives submitted a bill, H.R. 4038, which allowed Syrians to get refugee status in the United States. Obviously, Obama administration decided to give a humanitarian aid and accept Syrian refugees. However, U.S. drastically changed its policy towards Syrians after 2017. According to Ali Hart's article, Trump's double standard, published in April 2018, only 11 Syrians have been granted the refugee status in the United States in 2018. It seems after terrorist attack in Paris in 2015, Trump administration decided to change its policy towards Syrians. As a result of that change, Trump signed an executive order which rejected to accept people from Syria and 6 more countries. Obviously, the United States administration, to justify its position, tries to highlights the importance of national security and ties the problem of Syrian refugees with the safety of all Americans. Let's cross the bridge that separates our country from Assyria and discover why 11 million Syrians have scattered all over the world and continuously are begging a refugee status under a safe haven. In 2011, Syrian civil war erupted and ruined millions of lives. An extremist group calling themselves ISIS began invading and destroying the country. As according to Zizak's article, 4.9 million Syrians have been registered as refugees in 2011. Unfortunately, these people had to escape from their own country and turn to their native countries, neighbor countries, Lebanon, Turkey, and Greece, Germany, US. Furthermore, as a result of the war, thousands of residences have been destroyed and bombed. According to Hammer's film produced in 2017, Arani Mustafa, Syrian refugee, walking around towards her ruins of her own house, says, "I always think, oh, this is a war zone for the rest of the world, but for us, this is home." Rania, as well as millions of Syrians, have suffered the same fate. They have no hope and future in their own homeland. If they stay, they most probably will be killed or enslaved by ISIS. Therefore, they chose the dangerous path of escape from hell to face the uncertainty and new challenges of life. Now you may say, why Syrian refugees should come and disturb our lives? Let's make it clear and realize why the US should continue accepting and supporting Syrians. From a humanistic point of view, the United States, as the most powerful country on earth, should demonstrate its strength and express empathy to provide the very basic needs to Syrian refugees, physiological, safety, and social. Furthermore, U.S. will highly benefit from accepting Syrian refugees because they mostly are hardworking people with skills and professional craftsmen who will work for good of our society. Furthermore, here are the steps that U.S. should undertake. First, Muslim ban should be removed. According to executive order text, Trump says, "I hereby proclaim that the entry of nationals from Syria is detrimental to the United States' interests." It seems that the Trump administration tries to protect Americans from Syrian Muslims. Some may argue that some Syrians could be connected to ISIS. If it is so, why we do not suspend the entry of Muslims from Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and other Muslim countries, especially taking into consideration the fact that some of these citizens are connected to ISIS. Therefore, Muslim ban is very, very subjective and one-sided and does not really address the safety of US citizens. Furthermore, Syrian refugees who are already here should continue living in the United States. And U.S., as the most country with huge resources and territories, should not limit their presence for certain limited period. U.S. United States should stop arbitrary resettlement of these innocent and vulnerable people who lost every single thing but their lives. These suffering people should never, never, never be traumatized anymore. This persuasive speech intended to share with you the terrible experiences and harsh path Syrian refugees had to undergo, and ask you just for a moment, please, 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 put yourselves on the shoes of the Syrian refugees. We need to express a deeper empathy to be able to help these people. In my talk, first I discussed the main directions of U.S. policy towards Syrian refugees, then the reasons caused the emergence of millions of Syrian refugees, and the steps the United States should undertake to continue accepting and supporting these people. 3-year-old Ayla Kurdi was a Syrian refugee who did not get to its final destination, who did not survive that harsh experience. But please think, none of us can guarantee that instead of this kid could be one of our relatives or kids. Please find an hour and watch a documentary produced by PBS, Exodus, in 2018. And please visit MyCareOrg and write a letter which will be seen by all refugees in the world. Let them know that they are not alone. Send them your message of hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Diana, for that very passionate speech about the Syrian refugee crisis. I'd now like to call our third speaker in the persuasive category, David Arahu.
Imagine a 6-year-old girl in the four walls of her house, playing with her little dog. Life is good. Everything's perfect. She sees a man walking into her house, carrying some money. Talks to her mom. They make some sort of transaction. Next thing you know, the mom says, "Hey, he's gonna take care of you from now on." She leaves her house, and with it, her dignity, her innocence, her purity, and humanity. She has now been sold into trafficking. Her life has completely changed forever. Her purpose is gone. This story happens more than you think, due to poverty and other situations. I believe that we, now more than ever, need to get involved with organizations who fight human trafficking. We should not be silent, we should be active. Let's talk about what is human trafficking. Well, right now, human trafficking is considered to be modern day slavery, and this has many faces. Let's talk about the different faces of human trafficking right now are domestic servitude, sex trafficking, forced labor, bonded labor, child labor, and forced marriage. There's so many different faces of this thing that exists right now in our day and our time. I want to focus on two different ones, child trafficking and sex trafficking. According to the International Labor Organization, in 2016, an estimated 40.3 million people are in human trafficking right now. One in four victims of modern day slavery are kids. Kids. Women and girls account for 99% of the victims in commercial sex industry. Sunday Times said in an article that in 2012, Singapore police staged over 3,000 raids and caught about 200 pimps. And they also stated that human trafficking contributed to about $10 to $12 billion in Asia alone. How do these kids and young girls get trafficked? Many ways. Told you one earlier, they get sold. Especially women get tricked into modeling jobs, opportunities, kidnaps. They're given this little vision of a dream just to be sold for sex, no longer having a future. How can we get involved? First, I want to tell you guys about what's already happening, what we're doing already. So according to the New York Times, March 23rd, 2018, they released a paper titled, "Craigslist Drops Personal Ads Because of Sex Trafficking Bill." It goes something like this: looking for love or a casual encounter? You'll have to find it someplace other than Craigslist. This was a response to the new bill that President Trump passed. One organization that I like to be involved with is called Zoe International, and you can look them up at gozoe.org. They have a three-stage program, which is prevention, rescue, and restoration. Let's talk about prevention. They rescue at-risk teens, so before they even get trafficked, they look for people who are already at risk and rescue them, help them out, make sure they don't even get to that place. They also spread awareness, and they have a network of law enforcement officials, pastors, to help find and save potential victims. Next stage is rescue. I love this one. They have raids, prosecutions, rescue of labor sex trafficking victims, and they coordinate with the Thai government. That means that the government is going to them for help. They're saying, "What are you guys doing? It is so impactful. How can we help you guys? Can you guys help us lower the rates of victims?" And lastly, restoration. They get the rescued victims and they bring them back to safe houses, which are care facilities. And these places are safe. They have education. They have hope. They have inspiration. And they also help them deal with their emotional wounds that they have. A lot of people who've been raped and molested have been known to commit suicide. They're in depression, they're anxiety. They don't see themselves the same. I have a teen that went, and when they saw the kids who were in these safe houses, the kids were so joyful because they came out of a dark place. A lot of times nowadays, we talk about, "Oh my gosh, my teacher's so mean," or, "Man, they messed up my coffee order," all these little problems. And if you look at the bigger picture, these kids don't have the opportunity to complain. They're not heard, they don't have a name, they don't have a voice. Zoe International can use your help by donations, sponsoring a kid that will sponsor their food, their clothing, their education. Also volunteering, because if you volunteer, they don't have to spend money on hiring people. They're an awesome place to really get partnered up with. Here's the thing, you guys. These people that traffic kids are relying on your silence. They're relying on you saying, I got bigger things to worry about. So in a sense, if you're not part of the solution, we are part of the problem, because we're not speaking up. We're not spreading awareness. And if you think $5 donations a month will make a difference, well, how do you think Starbucks gets rich? I'm pretty sure that your money doesn't make up their whole company. So if they can have billions of dollars or whatever they make, and Coca-Cola, how much if we unite as a population and say no more? This is our fight. This is our generation. Don't let that girl in the story not have a name, not have a purpose, not have identity. With your help, we can make a difference. I hope that today you don't leave saying, oh, that was a cool speech, but I'm gonna do something about it. Let's get activated, you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, David, for that very powerful speech. I'd like to call up our fourth speaker in the persuasive category, Amir Rod Atarodi.
Thank you. I would just like to say it's a blessing to be amongst all these great speakers. Can I do the headset, if that's okay? Can I do this? You know, it's a bad idea to hook. Sorry.
All right. Okay. Oh, wait a second. Okay. Hello, everybody. How are y'all doing? Okay. Hello, hello. Okay, I am a full-time student. I work hard, I take care of my own family, and on top of all that, I'm an audio engineer. What is that? It means I work on music, I rap, I work day and night trying to be better than I was the day before. Okay? So, I wanna ask y'all something. Do you think I'm stressed? Y'all think I'm stressed trying to balance a social life, family, friends, everything. You think I'd be stressed, right? Yeah, I know y'all can relate. Who here is stressed trying to work as a college student, worried about debt, worried about financial gain, worried about the job prospects you're gonna try to get? Yeah, I know y'all worried about it. I know y'all so worried about it that you all are here trying to get some extra credit for Travis's class, for Anderson, who else? Oh, and the wonderful Professor Silver. Okay, there's many other beautiful professors over there. Lloyd, I know this dude. So, y'all here for that extra credit, why? Because we need the grades, because we are stressed. But wait, how do we cope with this stress? There's so many different coping mechanisms to this stress, but are they healthy? That's the question. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here today to tell you, persuade you, why listening to a song a day will take the stress away. A song a day will take the haters away. Now, I want y'all to listen to more music. That's what I want you to do. So we're gonna review three main points today, okay? Nothing too crazy, not trying to get out of hand, but we're gonna talk about where the stress comes from for college students and how they cope. We're gonna talk about the medicinal benefits of music and how it affects your health and mood. And last but not least, I'm gonna talk about where we can get this amazing thing that we all call music. All right, now let's get to where the stress comes from. In an article written by Tamara Lewin of the New York Times, she stated that job prospects and debt is the main reason for college student stress. Y'all stress because you gotta get a job, you gotta make money, you gotta take care of friends. It's like you're trying to balance everything at one time, but it gets so complicated that sometimes you just kind of slip through the cracks and you're just like, ah, I'm stressed. Oh, I need something to go to, I need to cope. So how do we cope normally? Well, college students tend to cope by getting into drugs, alcohol, more partying, and getting, you know, a little more active. In an article written by Brianna Boynton of the U.S. News and World Report, she states that loneliness, social and academic stress and pressure is the reason why kids and college students turn to these drugs, turn to these negative coping mechanisms. So I'm here today to tell you the beautiful medicinal benefits of what? Music, because a song a day keeps the haters away. Now, the medicinal benefits of music. In a BBC News article, a wonderful lady by the name of Sonia McGilchrist wrote down saying that I took studies, and took my time to go around to different universities and see what the reason is to study to figure out what music does to make people happy. And she said music releases a chemical in your brain that is called dopamine. Yes, dopamine, what is dopamine? Dopamine is the feeling you get when you get a text from the girl you like, when you get a text from the guy you're like, ooh, he's so fine. When you get all those likes on Instagram follow because you're feeling good about yourself. Yeah, that's what dopamine is. It's the feeling of being good. Okay, now, beyond dopamine, you know now that music can help you with all the stress through this beautiful thing that releases in your brain just to get you comfortable. I have another article written by Arizona State Press of the Triskatelli saying music therapy reduces stress because it is dopamine. It reduces stress, it's proven. Being happy is not gonna make you stressful. That's why we do the things we do on the weekend. That's why the weekend exists. Now, even furthermore, the medicinal benefits of this thing that I love to call music, Harvard Health Publishing wrote down an article stating that there's a mysterious link between music and how you feel in medicine. There's people with depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. I used to be like that when I was in middle school and high school. I was stressed. I had issues. I was going through things. I didn't know how to deal with it. But I realized that finding a positive outlook is gonna make me a much better person. Using my energy to dedicate myself to something more great is gonna make me feel better about myself. So, I'm here to talk to you about where to get this beautiful thing, this drug that I see as a drug, music. This is a natural drug, it's good for you, it's a great feeling. Where can we get this music, man? Where can we get music? Well, in an article written by Emily Blashford of the Huffington Post, she said listening to music is now easier than ever. Why? Because of technology. Back in the day, our parents couldn't even have this access. They couldn't. They had to listen to a radio to feel better. They had to go on the TV with 10 channels just to feel better. 10 channels. You go crazy if you're trying to listen, looking at the news or something, and there's that same cartoon rerun you've seen 15 times already just to watch it again. So, this thing, your phone in your hand, that shows this little thing that we call music, allows you to access it through different streaming platforms. What streaming platforms are we talking about? We're talking about Apple Music, we're talking about Spotify, we're talking about Tidal, Deezer, Google Play. There's so many more than just those. SoundCloud for underground artists, apps, everything. There's different places, many different places to go for the search of this wonderful thing that we call music. Why? Because a song a day keeps the haters away, a song a day keeps the stress away. Now, who here has a streaming service on their cell phone at this very right moment right now? All of you do. Then I don't want any excuses right now. I want all of you to take out your phone, go on that streaming service. Go on that streaming service. Why? Because my name is Rod, R-O-D. If you look that up on your iTunes or whatever streaming playlist, and you look up Desert Writing, yes, Rod Desert, D-E-S-E-R-T, not dessert, there's not two S's, Desert Writing, you will be acquainted with the beautiful song that will keep your stress away for many days. That is my song. That is my song. And I just wanted to say thank you all very much for listening to my wonderful presentation. Follow me at Rod's Records Instagram, SoundCloud, Rod's Records, Rod's Records.
Persuasive speech on listening to music. Okay, our last speaker in the persuasive category is Michael Sawinski.
This is difficult.
I know the feeling.
So, where about this? Okay. Thanks, Rod, for making me seem less energetic. No, no, that was great, that was great. On Monday, a school in Oklahoma will close for the day. Not because they enjoy three-day weekends more than we do, but because they simply do not have enough funding to stay open 5 days a week. Hello. My name is Michael Sawinski, and today I will be talking about federal government spending on education. As someone whose life goal it is to provide not only youth, but specifically at-risk youth, for opportunities and resources for success, I think this is the core of the issue. So today, I will be talking about what the issue is, why the issue occurs, and of course, what we can all do to help fix it. Which brings me to my first main point. The United States government has failed in providing all of us equally the amount of resources it takes to be successful under our current education system. Now, it is to be noted that states also have the responsibility of providing funding and resources for their respective students. However, let's play a quick game. Let's say this room is the United States, and we'll take someone from this side of the audience, let's say they're Utah. Utah spends $7,000 a year per student. Now that might seem like a lot of money. I would love $7,000 in my pocket, but unfortunately that's not gonna happen. On the left side, we have another student. Let's say they represent the state of New York. They spend $20,000 per year per student. That is a $13,000 gap in the amount of money spent on each student just because he or she is from Utah and he or she is from New York. And you might be thinking, well, the state of New York makes a lot more money than the state of Utah does. Sure, you're not wrong. But why does that mean that this kid does not get the same amount of opportunities than this kid does? And why does the federal government not step in and make sure we all have equal accessibility and yet expect us to all come out the same? Now, according to an article on CBBD.com, it states that 12 states to this day have not recovered from the budget crisis and the recession of 2008, and two of those states have been deemed unconstitutionally fit to provide adequate funds for their students to be successful. And another article posted on the Huffington Post, she states, part of the problem is that are we not only respecting our students, but we're not respecting our teachers. And in most top-performing countries, their teachers are treated and respected like engineers and doctors and are paid as such, whereas here it is very unlikely to see a public school teacher paid more than $60,000 a year. Which brings me on to my next point. Why? Why do we stand by and let this happen? Well, one of the biggest reasons that our education system is funded is, like I said earlier, was due to the recession, which has caused an increase in budget cuts and teacher layoffs. And according to an article about budget changes on TheBalance.com, from Obama's plan to Trump's plan, we are planning to cut another $6 billion in educational funding, which is a 10% decrease from an already failing plan today. And according to another article recently published on TheHeckingReport.com, states from 2010 to today, we have had a 4% total decrease around the country of the amount of money that we are spending on our students. Now, what does that say about the faith that we put into the future of our nation and our economy and our society? Now, one of the most staggering things that I found while doing my research was, where does the rest of the money go? And I printed out this graph that may be hard for you to see for some of you in the back, but I'll explain it. Now, if you can see, this very large chunk of the pie right here is how much we spend on defense spending. It's around 54% or $534 billion out of our $1.15 trillion budget. And if you, I'm sure you can't see this one, but education, you see it? You see it right over here? The amount of faith that they put into us, it's right over here. So that was one of the most shocking things that I found in discovering where the rest of the money goes and why the federal government turns another cheek in saying, we're gonna allow our states to fail. Now, which brings me on to my final point, which is what we can do. In an article written on the USAHerald.com, the author clearly states the solution itself isn't easy, but it's worth it. It's changing the mindset of our government officials, of the people around us, and the people in charge to say, we want to better prioritize our students, our education system, and the future of our economy. Now, one of the reasons that they're saying it's beneficial, and according to that previously mentioned Huffington Post article I read, states that for every dollar we put into our students, we get seven back in the long term. Meaning it is only in our best interest to put more money into our education system because it only helps further our country's progression. Now I know what some of y'all might be thinking. I already made it through the terrible years that were middle school and high school and I got through my prom photos and I'm done with it now. So why should I care? And here's why you should care. Because your kids, your cousins, your nephews, family members, and your fellow citizens are currently being let down. Not just you, but people all over the country are not given the opportunity that you were given. So today I discussed what the problem was and what the effects of that problem are. I discussed why the problem occurs and a couple things that we can do to fix it. So I'll leave you all with this. The Constitution gives us our three inalienable rights, and I'm sure you all know them. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And in my personal opinion, and I hope you can agree, taking away a student's ability for the right for a beneficial education is stripping their right for their pursuit of happiness. Thank you.
For that wonderful speech on federal spending on education. So that's going to wrap us up out of the persuasive category. We're going to give the judges a couple minutes to tabulate the persuasive category, and then we'll be announcing our finalists. We're going to be announcing our top six winners in just a couple minutes. So hang tight, give us a couple minutes, and we'll be right back.
If you're just now tuning in, we're getting close. Right here at the 2018 Los Angeles Pierce College Speech Tournament. Brought to you by KPCRadio.com. This is Mario Lawson. We're getting close. The judges have already made their decisions. The envelopes have been sealed and placed out with the awards. You can see them sitting right here in the podium right in front of your face, folks. Stay tuned. We're going to find out who won. The first place and second in persuasive and first place and second in informative speech at the 2018 Los Angeles Pierce College Speech Tournament, right here on Pierce College campus, right here in the Great Hall. So stay tuned, folks. This is Mario Lawson reporting for KPCRadio.com.
You'll have to kind of indulge me for just a couple minutes because there are a ton of thank yous that I have to make. Because of course, as many of you know, an event of this size is not possible to make without the support of a tremendous amount of people. So first and foremost, I want to give a huge shout out to the ASO for their generous funding. This event would not be possible without them. In addition, I want to thank the following individuals. Okay, and I ask that these people be recognized as they can stand as I call their names. Cherry Yeprim Davoudian for providing the department with a vision for growth and success. Thank you for extraordinary. My wonderful full-time colleagues, we are a true team, and again, this is not any one person, this is just a collection of so many people's efforts to make this event possible. Barbara Anderson. Jennifer Rosenberg. Christine Ersing Marcus. And Robert Lloyd. We have a fabulous dean as well, Dean Mary Ann Guevara O, for providing counsel and assistance to our communications department. Thank you so much. To all of our judges and faculty who helped assist in the first round, please again stand as I call your name. Brianna Brody. Jessica Kelpine, Robert Loy once again. Lori Travis. Matthew Ward. Tiffany Chen. Alex Howard. Troy Jeanette Phillips. And of course, last but not least, our former Pierce student, Michelle Brownlee. A super special thank you to our wonderful panel of finalist judges, all from CSUN, Dr. John Kephart, Dr. Joel Lemuel, and Dr. Don Brownlee. When this event started, I had this idea that I wanted to do something big. And I went to Dr. Kephart and I said, how can I do it? And he was the first person to say, I will help you. And I am forever grateful for your support and for making this happen, for coming every year. And really, if not for you, this would not be possible.
Thank you.
So thank you so much. Dr. Brownlee and Dr. Lemuel, we are so fortunate and honored to have you both here. We hope this becomes a yearly tradition that you come back every year and judge. No pressure, but a little pressure, because we want to have you back, right? And I also want to thank the Brownlee family for generously sponsoring Communication Studies scholarships. Application deadline is May 25th for those of you that are here and going to apply. We do have some applications here, so please, if you are interested, it's all thanks to the Brownlee family and also for Michelle's wonderful experience here at Pierce College. So we thank their family for their support as well. Of course, one last plug for our speech and debate team at CSUN. If you would like to join the team, Dr. Lemuel is standing by to give you more information. So thank you. Linda Solar, Christy Lauderdale, Catherine Fleming, and Plant Facilities, who have helped to provide logistical assistance, coordination, expertise, and technology for today's event. Thank you so much. Doreen Clay, Queen of Marketing and PR, for putting us up on the street marquee, publicizing the event every single year, putting it out on social media, and just making us, you know, public. We thank you so much. We so appreciate it. And actually, our publicity department needs to get a picture of all the photos of all the finalists officially. So please stay at the very end, all 10 of you, because we do want to get an official shot. Mario Lawrence from KPC Radio, who is currently broadcasting this tournament to shake up the college airwaves. He made a special trip from CSUN. He is actually a former Pierce College student, and I twisted his arm to come back from CSUN to be here specially today to broadcast this. So thank you so much for being here. Our fabulous sheriff who provided safety for us, thank you so much. The Roundup for their tremendous support and publicity of this event prior to, during, and afterwards, and a special thanks to our wonderful editor, Randy Love, as well. All student volunteers who helped today, including ASO officers and any Communication Studies Association Club members that were here, we could not have done this without you. You were here at 8 o'clock helping, so thank you so much. Our amazing guest DJ, Valley Beats. Who always gets our tournament party started with some incredible music and good vibes. Thank you, DJ Valley Beats. I hope I didn't leave any thank yous unmentioned, but if not, I apologize. But thank you really to all of you for participating and for being here to support your classmates as well and for speaking. So before I announce the finalists, the extra credit sign-up sheets will be going out shortly, but don't go anywhere because we have to announce the winners. The informative category is first. In third place, winning a cash scholarship prize of $75 and this amazing crystal trophy. Bragging rights, by the way, to everyone that wins today. Third place, $75 cash scholarship prize sponsored by ASO. Ellen Lenderman! Congratulations, Ellen. In second place in the informative category, winning $100 cash scholarship prize and also an amazing trophy, Akani Sato. Okay, I need a drum roll, I think, for the first place. All right, first place winner, $200 cash prize scholarship, and of course this fabulous trophy, Anna Lundmark. Okay, moving on to the persuasive category. In third place, winning $75 cash scholarship and this beautiful trophy, David Arahu. In second place in the persuasive category, winning $100 cash scholarship prize and this beautiful trophy, Michael Sawinski. Last but not least, okay, the big prize. I need a drum roll, I think, for this one, too. Thank you. In first place in the persuasive category, winning $200 cash scholarship prize and this lovely last trophy, Diana Hovanisian! Congratulations to all of our top six winners. Let's give them one more big round of applause. Okay, we're gonna ask our top six to stay up here and then our top 10 will also come up here. Thank you so much for coming again for this year. Students, please make sure that you sign the extra credit sign-up sheet that has your instructor's name on it in the back corner. Thank you again. Happy Mother's Day to all of you moms out there. A little early, happy Mother's Day. We'll see you all next year. DJ Valley Beats, play us out.
All right, folks. We are here. The finalists and the winners have been presented. Stay tuned, because we're getting ready to see if we can get a winner's circle interview with each of the finalists, each of the winning contestants of this 2018 Los Angeles Pierce College Speech Tournament.
Here. I spoke about something I was really passionate about. I spoke about anxiety and what it's like and how you can help yourself. So it was a lot of fun just being informative and giving people a couple tips on how to deal with that, yeah?
Tell us about, you know, the reason why you spoke about anxiety. And I know it's something you're passionate about. And I know it's something that, you know, touched home for you. But tell us why it was so important for you to speak about it in this particular tournament and what you wanted to relay to the listeners.
I just think that so many college kids these days have anxiety, and it's just such a growing disorder in our generation. And so many people find the wrong ways to deal with it or don't find ways to deal with it at all and end up dropping out or not just finding the right outlets for it. So I wanted to just give people a couple tips and let them in on my life and how to better themselves as well.
And last but not least, T, tell us what you won your award for. What category and what place?
I won third place in the informative category today.
All right. Thanks, Ellen. You have a great day and congratulations. All right, next up, we got second place for persuasive speech. What's your name again?
Michael Sawinski.
Michael. Yeah. So tell us what you spoke about and your experience on stage, how it felt.
Yeah, so I did speech and debate in high school. I talked about federal spending and education, something I'm really passionate about. I'm planning on starting a nonprofit to help create it. And the experience was great. It was nervous, of course, but I came out, I put that Mamba mentality, go Lakers, of course, and I put it to work, and it was a great experience, and I hope I can do it again at some sort of level, because it was a lot of fun.
That's great. Now, I heard you said that you were passionate about, you know,
federal
spinner education. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, so I know that you said you're very passionate about it. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what you wanted to convey to the listeners when you wrote your speech?
Right. So one of the things I was trying to convey and something that I always try to employ is just creating equal opportunity for kids, especially inner city kids and at-risk youth, to be able to succeed in our current education system. I think it is flawed in the fact that the rich get rich and the poor get poorer in some respects. And I just feel like in order for everyone to be able to help our entire country grow, that we need to make sure everyone is given the proper opportunity to do so. So I feel like that's, you know, one of my life goals, and I won't rest until I make sure it happens.
Thanks again, man. And thanks for coming down and congratulations on your award, man.
I appreciate it.
And thanks for sharing. And I am here with?
Diana.
Diana, can you tell us? Oh, that's great. Can you tell us what place you won? And tell us, once you tell us what place you won, tell us about what you spoke about and how it felt.
Yeah, a message was persuasive speech. It was about like Syrian refugees and should U.S. support and accept Syrian refugees again. And I think that U.S. should accept Syrian refugees because it's a huge country with huge territories and resources and should support these people. And I'm really excited to be here in this event. And I highly appreciate, first of all, my professor who encouraged me to be here, Robert Loy, because he put so much effort and he's so professional. And I really appreciate. And I'm so happy to be here in just a moment. Thank you.
Nice. So can you tell us what you wanted? I know Syrian refugees is an important part of your life right now and conveying that message across.
What's important in my life?
I know the topic that you spoke about was very important to you. So I just wanted to know what in particular did you want to convey to the listeners out here specifically?
Yeah, I just want to say that we don't need not to be indifferent towards them, these people. And we need to understand that even with now we have so much advantages upon them. But we need to understand that there are people who don't have a place to live, a safe place to live. They don't have food, they don't have drink. And there are so many children who are living in the ruins or in camps. And they are not, they don't have like a future, no hope. And maybe they will be died another day. And I just want people to understand that we need to provide and express empathy. And second, we need to be more informed about this issue in order to be able to help them. And the second thing that we need to do, we can visit my whitehelmet.com and donate a dollar, which is not too much. And also we can also visit my care org and just write a letter, which will be sent by all refugees. Just send them some note that they are not alone. We need to do at least if we don't donate them a dollar, we just need to write a letter for them.
Wow! Thank you, Diana, and congratulations on your win. No problem. One more day. How you doing today?
Pretty good.
Next, what's your name again?
David.
David. Yeah. So, can you tell us what you spoke about and how did it feel up there for you?
I spoke about fighting human trafficking and why we should get involved. And just being up there, I just felt like I was really playing a role in making a difference. So it was really cool that I was able to give those people who didn't have a voice a voice.
Wow. So can you exactly tell us? I know that's an important topic to you. Yeah. I mean, human trafficking is just... to me, I just can't fathom the fact that we're doing this in the United States and in mostly in foreign countries. But at the same time, I'd like to know what you wanted to convey to the people out here. What did you want to get across to the listeners specifically through your speech?
I think the main point was that being silenced is actually helping the problem grow, and that us as individuals coming together can actually make a huge difference. So we always think about, oh, like, I personally can't make a difference. But if you make the intention to try, what if everyone makes that intention? And what difference can we make as a unity, as a population? What's a standard we can set for the next generation?
Thank you, man. Well, it's great having you, and congratulations on your win. Thank you so much. Come on over, and we got our winner on Informative. All right, and what's your name again?
Anna Lundmark.
Anna, it was great having you come down and win. I mean, your speech was the first one, and it was the most powerful one, I think. It came out, and I just, it didn't even look like you skipped a beat, just to be honest with you.
Thank you. I mean, my headset was falling off in the beginning, so I was kind of freaking out, like, oh no, do I look like I'm all nervous? But it was really fun, and your energy was great. I loved it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a question. Now, what did you speak about for the listeners here?
Yeah. So I spoke about mindful meditation. I spoke about how it's a way to cure depression, because usually people use medication, and I cured my own depression by using mindful meditation. So I
Wow, that's awesome. Can you tell us what you wanted to get across to the listeners out here during your speech?
Yeah, of course. So basically, I was just telling them that what it does is, if you learn how to focus on your breath and then pay attention to life without judgment, you're able to become less stressed, you can process your thoughts and emotions, and then you will actually feel better.
Wow, thank you, Anna. I mean, that is, I mean, even here, you're powerful in your speech. Just, I got it here. I got it all here, you know? So thank you, Anna.
Thank you so much. And
congratulations on your first place
win. Thank you so much. It was so nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you, too. Have a great day.
You too. I have a question.
And we're here with?
Akane Saito?
Yeah. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm surprised I said it right, because I'm sometimes terrible. Now, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about your speech, and how did it feel being up there?
I'm an international student, so I was very nervous to participate in this tournament. Mm-hmm. And I asked my professor, if I were to do this tournament, will I do good? And he said, of course. And he told me my topic is very good. So he said, I definitely joined this competition. I joined this, but I was still nervous. So I did a lot of practice with him. Yeah, so I got second place.
How did it feel on stage? How did you feel?
I was scary because everyone is native speaker and I'm not. I'm very nervous about my pronunciation. And yeah, but it was fun because I was already chosen top 10 speakers. So if I don't get any places, second or third, I'll be fine because I'm top 10 speakers.
But you did. You placed. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And no problem. And last but not least, as you were formulating your speech, getting it ready, and you wanted, I'm sure it's a topic that you felt it was close to your heart, but what did you want to tell the audience? What did you want to convey to them when you prepared your speech?
I don't know, but I could do this, so everyone could do this, I think.
That's good. So you just want to show that you can do this. If you can do this, everybody else can.
Yeah.
All right, that's so great. That's so wonderful. No problem, and congratulations again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And so that's it for us today, folks. We have just closed out. Oh, actually, if I could scam some of these professors into getting on the mic. Look at, I see the fingers pointing. I see fingers pointing. Interviews with professors. Uh-oh.
Go Matadors.
Yeah. All right. We got another Matador. All right. Yes. What's your name again?
Brianna Brody.
Brianna Brody, that's right. I remember now. Brianna, you came and helped everybody set up and got really involved with everything.
Well, yes, I was able to kind of like help set up, but mainly, you know, Michelle took the reins with a lot of things, and she's amazing in setting everything up and making sure everyone's organized and knows exactly what to do. So it was awesome.
Is this this is the first or the second competition you've been involved in, or more
this
than?
This is the second one. This is the second full one. My first year, I could only judge in the prelim rounds, and this was the second time I got to see it all the way through, which was really awesome.
Well, so you actually judged in the semifinal rounds?
Yes, I did.
Wow, what was that like? What was the experience? I mean, as a judge, what did that feel like?
It's super cool. I mean, like, you get to see all the students, and they're super nervous because they don't know what they got themselves into. They don't know what to expect, and so all of them are kind of nervous, but then you see them just kind of come into their own, and they're really excited, and it was really cute to see all their peers show up and their friends show up to support them in the room, so that was really nice.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty packed in here. It was crowded.
It was really crowded.
And so what are you guys going to do after this? What's next for, you know, your department, or while you're coming back? So how does that work?
I mean, I don't know. I guess we have finals in the next 3 weeks. So now students have this under their belt. They got a lot of extra credit, which is pretty cool. So I think they feel pretty confident going into finals now. And so it's just a matter of finishing up projects, finishing up their final speeches, finishing up final exams, and then Brahmas are off to summer vacation.
And what's left? As for the rest of us matadors.
We're going into finals week next week, which is super exciting. We're almost on the way to summer vacation. I'm so excited to see some of my students walk this semester because I teach at CSUN as well, and so I get to see some of them walk, which is really cool.
I didn't know you taught over there as well. That's great. I get to see you over there too.
Yes, definitely. Just kind of around everywhere. And it's really great because Pierce is always really heavy in transferring over to CSUN, so it's great seeing students here and then seeing them again at CSUN, so it's a nice little connection that they have with each other.
So you're going to get some of the communication students coming over. You teach communication, right?
Yes, I teach communication.
Okay, good. Good. So, wait a minute, do you teach any speech classes?
I do. I teach speech classes mainly at Pierce.
Advanced over there?
No.
I was hoping I'd get you next semester.
No, but there's some awesome people over there, and they also experience teaching here at Pierce as well, and so it's a great camaraderie, and all, like, a lot of CSUN alum here as instructors at Pierce College, which is super cool.
Yeah, and I plan to do the same thing, be over here and at CSUN instructing. So I'm looking forward to running into you in those circles.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thanks again, and I hope to talk to you soon, Professor. I don't like the end because I don't want to leave.
I know.
Thanks, Professor. All right, and we're here with Michelle Silver. Uh-oh. I'm going to steal this interview from her. Thanks. You too. Oh, Michelle, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Mario. Appreciate it.
No problem. I just want to talk to you about, I mean, you do this every year, and what? How many is this now?
This is the 6th annual speech tournament.
But every year, I'm told by various people that you're running around putting it together. I mean, what's the experience like for you?
The experience is a little crazy, but I have to say that it's not any one person that pulls it off. And when you have an event this size that involves so many little details and so many little things that have to go on, it's our entire department that helps, it's student volunteers, it's ASO, so many volunteer judges coming from CSUN for the first round, and then of course for the final round we had a complete volunteer panel of 3 directors of forensics from CSUN, both current and former. So it's really quite amazing. It's quite a spectacle to be here and experience, but we always love the energy of it all. It brings us all together.
Indeed. I see when you guys get here, as someone said, the president-to-be, the student body president-to-be, she said that, you know, she came in here and saw the excitement and all the professors, you know, mingling with laughter and joy. And how is that possible? I mean, tell us about your department, how the camaraderie in your department.
So we're very fortunate and very blessed 100 times over to have a cohesive department that is not just a group, it's really more of a team. And to have, there's no way that this could be done without the tremendous colleagues that I have putting in hours and hours of effort and getting their students here. And every year it's a success because of our department and our colleagues. We're very fortunate to all be working together.
That is amazing. That is amazing. And last but not least, because I know you're on your way out, but I've always wondered, I mean, as a professor, I mean, I know part of your job is to make sure students are learning and growing. But I mean, when you put together this competition, when you guys get together and think about this tournament, what do you want to get across to these students? And what do you really want to, how do you want to really want to motivate them? Or what do you want them to do later or motivate them to do later?
So the purpose of this competition was really to, you know, give students the opportunity to come out and practice the skills that they've learned in the classroom during the semester and go outside of the classroom to have their voice even bigger, right? And to allow them to speak about issues that are important to them, whether it's issues of social justice or issues that they feel passionate about or issues that they just want to inform us about. So to give them those opportunities and a platform for student success, where they can challenge themselves to step outside of their comfort zone and come here and just take it to the next level. And as you notice today, everybody took it to the next level. They worked they give us their hearts and their souls, and they practiced, they were amazing, and that's what our campus is about. So creating a culture of opportunities for students to encourage success.
Wow, thanks again, Michelle, and that was just amazing. Thank you so much, Professor, and we'll see you soon. Next year, 7th annual? All right.
Absolutely. 7th annual speech tournament next year. I hope you'll be back, Mario.
I hope so, too. This is Mario Lawson reporting for KPCRadio.com.